This is Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 a.m.
You're on Rally Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. And remember, you can send us a text at 2057. Email us, email me at inbox@rallycheck.radio. Well, for the politicians, it's all over. You know, they've ended everything to do with COVID. And they actually don't want to talk about it because they're heading into an election and they're after our votes. Well, COVID isn't all over for a lot of us because the horrifying health consequences of that jab linger, the economic damage linger, the personal damage linger. And we do want to talk about it because people are hurting. And we've got a very, very interesting case today, and it's a case with Fletcher Building and their private mandates. And I'm very happy to welcome, first of all, Penny Jackson, who's organised the group. And we've also got Matthew Haig from Frontline Law to be helping us understand the law and the legal ramifications of what's happened. Now, good morning, Penny.
Good morning, Rodney.
Lovely to have you. And good morning, Matthew.
Hello, Rodney.
Thank you for taking this most important case and for being willing to come along and support Penny and the group and to share it with us. Now, Penny, just in your own time, tell us what happened.
Okay. So as we all know, that COVID hit in 2020, 2021. Going back with that history, we all know that there were lockdowns and mandates that came through from the government and some companies. Our company was a part of that, Fletcher Building Limited. The lockdowns saw all of us that could, working from home at the time. There were many of us that were stuck at home anyway, but a lot of us could work from home. We didn't think that Fletcher Building were going to mandate the employees. They have something like 20,000 staff throughout New Zealand and Australia, and we were a private company. We are a private company that was not required to mandate their staff at that stage. And we were assured by Fletcher Building head office that no mandates were coming through for the staff, which gave us, a little bit of assurance because people were feeling a little bit nervous about mandates and having to get a vaccine for a job.
Can I just interrupt you, Penny?
Yes.
What was your job with Fletcher Building?
I was branch administrator for placemakers.
Okay. And you could happily work at home when there were lockdowns?
Oh, I did work from home in lockdowns. Yes. So there were no problems with that. None of us could go into the work environment unless you were a health and safety committee or the branch operator and manager. So everybody else was basically locked out of the environment, office staff, most people were at home. I, except for a few yard people, because our company had some leeway with the government as an essential service. Yes. So for plumbers and builders and things like that that were called out to urgent work, some of the yard staff were in. But apart from that, all office staff, everybody else was sitting at home, and I was doing my work through the computer, so I was working from home.
And tell me, and I'm sorry to again interrupt and question you, but I just want to get this clear in my own head. Was there a discussion amongst staff about vaccines and mandates, or was it sort of just individuals being fearful? So when you're saying you were, it was, with some trepidation you were approaching this and whether getting that assurance from head office that you wouldn't be mandated. Was that a discussion within and around the staff?
I think it was for everybody. Everybody was gripped to the TV watching Jacinda Ardern telling us how many people had, were passing away, or, what the COVID ramifications were and how she was trying to get a vaccine into the country. When she did bring the vaccine in, there were some in our branch and other branches that, the group come from, that rushed out and got the vaccine straight away. And there tended to be a them and us attitude, at least in our branch, where the ones that were vaccinated were, trying to push forward the vaccine to others that weren't. So it became quite a stressful and difficult time. Even before Fletcher's brought in the mandate, we had bullying to such a degree in our branch that the people who didn't want to get vaccinated would not go into the staff room to have their lunches. They'd sit in their cars and have lunches. I had one manager tell me when I asked him politely about a haircut, and he turned around to me and he said, "My wife would never touch you, Penny." it was like.
And these were formerly colleagues, yes, who you would work with collegially.
Yes, and we'd worked with for years, and a couple of us had actually worked for the company for many years. There was one gentleman, and he'd worked for the company for 25 years, and he still didn't, he'd worked with these people for 25 years and considered them friends and colleagues, and you go into work and you have no idea, what people are like until something like this happens. For some reason, he was seen as the threat. It wasn't the other way around. If you get vaccinated, you think to yourself, I'm safe. So more for those that aren't vaccinated because they take the risk. But it wasn't like that. There was just so much coercion and manipulation going on. The branch operator at the time went round and asked everybody if they were going to get the vaccine. And I believe that was against the Privacy Act. This is before the mandate policy came out. And one of the managers questioned him on that and said, "You shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't be running around asking everybody whether they're going to get the vaccine." There would be groups of people that would just descend upon an unvaccinated person and just sort of try and coerce them at the same
time. The workplace.
Yeah, in the workplace. And at the same time, Fletcher Building were pushing a propaganda to get the vaccine. They had the health, which I was part of, the Health and Safety Committee, were running bonus little competitions, and you get a voucher of $50 if you send in your reason for being vaccinated. They also brought in a mobile vaccination cart into the car park, and one of the managers was walking alongside one of the unvaccinated people and said, "Hey, how about I take you over there and you get vaccinated right now?" It was that sort of thing. It was so much pressure. At that stage, a lot of us felt very, very stressed and uncertain about things. And
I want to dwell on this for a little bit, Penny.
Yeah.
It's hard now to remember it, how bad it was. I imagine our grandchildren won't believe us, because it's hard to believe that friends and family can so readily become bullies and snitches, and that was legitimated by the Prime Minister, every politician, and the news media, so that bullying and snitching and demanding to know vaccine status and being horribly rude was just declared to be okay And so many of us became bullies and snitches. It's unbelievable to me.
In that case, yes.
Because you'd always imagine that nice people would continue to be nice people.
Well, you work with them every day, Rodney, and you don't see the real side of people until something happens.
No. And it's very easy to be nice over a cup of tea and morning tea when there's no pressure. But when the proverbial hits the fan, you saw deep into people and it wasn't pleasant.
No, it wasn't.
So your workplace, for those who chose not to be vaccinated, as was their right at this point, and we'll get on to the legality of it shortly, but as was their right, they were perfectly entitled to choose not to be vaccinated.
That's right.
And for them, the workplace became toxic from management all the way through to your colleagues.
That's right, exactly.
And did you find yourselves the unvaccinated, the unwashed, the lepers, the rivers of filth in the organization? Did you find yourself coming together?
We naturally did, Rodney. Originally, there were around 12 of us in a branch of 50. This is my own example, but I know that the other people in the group have had the same experience as well. There were 12 of us, but that whittled down to only four because the others were so coerced, manipulated and bullied that they gave up in the end and they just went and got the vaccine. Nobody was doing any research. And what I was amazed at, because I was in the Health and Safety Committee, was why weren't we asking the question whether this vaccine was safe? And why weren't people getting informed consent from their doctors? And we had a couple of people in our branch suffer pericarditis and heart stroke. Not that they admitted that that came from the vaccine, but as we know now, looking back, it might well have. Mm. But all this was brushed under the carpet. And the people who were getting COVID, there came out from Fletcher Building a policy, a sick leave policy. And it was very discriminatory in nature. And this is one of the bullying things as well. It said that if you got COVID and you were vaccinated, they would pay for your sick leave. You didn't have to use your own sick leave and holiday pay to stay at home for your 2 weeks mandatory stay at home. But if you were unvaccinated, they were not going to pay anything towards it. You had to use your holiday. You had to use your holiday. Accumulation or your sick leave that you had accumulated over the years.
Okay. Can I just stop you there, Penny?
Yes.
And jump to Matthew. Because I just think the context of what was going on is so important to the story. Matthew, what's the legal situation of at this time of that bullying that was allowed to go on, first of all, within the organization, and of course all organizations? Fletcher Building weren't unique, where managers were bullying staff, and more particularly managers were ignoring the bullying that was going on within the organization, such that, you know, staff had to have their morning tea and lunch sitting in their car. Point one. And point two, what's the legal status of an organization saying, well, this is how the sick leave works, and if you're not vaxxed, you're not entitled?
Well, first of all, I want to acknowledge Penny and the group for fighting against what has happened to them. And it's just been horrible. And Penny's story is shared by many New Zealanders who are affected by vaccine mandates, both from the government and from their employer, but also other COVID restrictions. To answer your questions directly, Rodney, the bullying, I mean, an employer has an obligation to take all reasonable steps to prevent and stop bullying in the workplace. And there's no dispute about that. That's not a controversial statement. Once it's brought to their attention, they have to do something about it. And in Penny's case, it's very clear that the employer was aware that there was conflict, there was mistreatment of employees by other staff in the workplace. And it just always amazes me that because it's about COVID vaccination, it was somehow tolerated more than, for example, someone being bullied for dietary choices or requirements due to their religion or other medical choices to do with the body. And to this day, I don't understand why us as a country led by the government took that approach. And it's sad and it's really hard. All I can think of, and the cynical part of me, Rodney, and I try not to be cynical as much as I can help it, thinks it's when you get beneath all the layers of public messaging and rhetoric, it's just about power. There was a problem, it was COVID. The government wanted to be seen to do something about it, and it was a form of virtue signaling. Here it is, here's what we're doing. And if you don't get the vaccine, you're not on board, you're not part of the solution, and in fact, you're harming other New Zealanders. And we now know that although my cases haven't been against the vaccine itself, they've been against the mandates. The vaccine was ineffective, or at least less effective than the government said it was against the spread and transmission of COVID, particularly the Omicron variant. And so actually, whether you're unvaccinated or not, didn't make a difference to other people's safety. And there is a Broadcasting Standards Authority decision that criticised the government for its messaging in that respect. It said, get vaccinated to protect your whānau. Well, whether you're vaccinated or not had no effect on your whānau. So that's the issue around bullying. In terms of the other question around sick leave, there's no explicit rule about that particular issue. But what I would do is point back to the good faith obligations on both the employer and the employee. And I can't think of any good reason why you would say to someone who's made a legitimate choice about what medication to receive, in this case, the vaccination, and say, you're not entitled to take sick leave when you're unable to come to work, when you're unwell, or when you're required to isolate because of government policy. And if you are vaccinated, then you can take sick leave. And in my mind, those issues are actually related. I think that really contributes towards the division between those two groups of people, because one's clearly being treated better than the other. I think it is a breach of good faith, and therefore I think it's a breach of employment law.
Mm. And of course, back then, my sense of it was, and you may not be able to comment, and feel free to say, look, you know, I'm a lawyer and got a license, but back then I felt the judiciary were wrapped up in it, and it would be hard to have taken the case because it seemed to me they were on the government side and being very, what's the word, conservative and, well, radical in their judgments, actually. And but now, maybe with the fullness of time, there will be cooler heads within our judiciary and the courts.
Mm. Look, I think that certainly was a perception out there that judges are part of the wider government, and that's quite true. They are.
Yes.
In my experience, that hasn't been the case. There have been decisions that I've succeeded in, and there's been decisions that I've failed in. But I haven't, I don't believe that was because judges want to support government above their legal obligations. One thing I would say is that judges are all lawyers by profession, and lawyers are notoriously disagreeable. And I don't think judges, particularly in the higher courts, would have any issue with criticising the government. We've seen that again and again. On the other hand, look, judges are human beings, and particularly when we had the Parliament protest outside the High Court, when we had the Yardley case, which was the case against the government mandate affecting Defence Force and police personnel, the judge would have looked out the window and seen that. I don't know what would have gone through his mind. I don't think it had an effect on his decision. He upheld our application for judicial review, but he is a human being. And I think you're right that in the fullness of time, we've just seen decision after decision, particularly in the Employment Relations Authority, holding employers accountable for meeting their employment obligations. And We've seen some good ones come out recently, and that's pleasing great. To see.
Sorry, Penny, jumping back to you, we've got this highly divisive, highly toxic workplace that's being winked at by management, if not actively stoked, because the managers are in on this. 12 was it you said, and it whittled down to 4. Then four. What happened?
So basically then the government came out with their mandates for you know, government departments, you know, like doctors and nurses and the teachers and people like that. And it went on record that some private companies were asking the government to change the wording of the Emergency Act so that private companies could also mandate. And it turned out that Fletcher Building were one of those companies. This surprised us because we'd been assured that there would be no mandates through Fletcher Building. They're one, if not the biggest, one of, if not the biggest company in New Zealand, private company, and people, as I say, around 20,000 people in New Zealand. So that surprised us enormously. Especially considering all their policies on bullying and all sorts of things like that. So we found that Fletcher Building were one of the people that had asked the government to allow private companies to mandate and just change the wording so that they could do that. Little did we know, but when we got round to November, the Fletcher Building, before they even told us that a mandate was coming through, had commissioned Rod Jackson from the Auckland University to come up with a risk assessment for all the employees of Fletcher Building. And now Rod Jackson is a professor, probably has some respect that way, but he's definitely not a medical professional. And he's not from MedSafe or anywhere else like that. So I don't know why they went to him, but they commissioned that, and he wrote a advice to Fletcher Building head office on the 17th of November, saying that he was basing his advice on a risk assessment undertaken by Fletcher Building. And this is before they even told us that a mandate was coming out. So this was based on a risk assessment undertaken by themselves, and it was basically a rubber stamp. And I just want to read out part of his letter because I really am shocked by this, but this is what he said, and it shows to me that this was all rubber stamped even before the mandate came out. It was all preconceived and done with government's approval. You know, right at the end of his letter, he says, "I am aware that a number of multinational companies like Fletcher Building have already signalled their intention to support mandatory vaccinations, and they will adapt their approach across the different territories and regions they operate in as appropriate." And then he goes on to say, basically, I rubber stamping this, I agree that the risk assessment overall, everybody needs to get vaccinated. It doesn't matter whether you're working in the yard, whether you drive a truck, whether you're outside in a garden centre, whether you work from home, everybody has to get vaccinated for Omicron. No, he was talking about Delta at the time, but Omicron had come through. Mm. So everybody knew at that stage that the vaccine was not working the way it was supposed to, and Omicron had come through.
I think their phrase was it was a little leaky. Now, what surprised you about that?
What surprised me was looking at the dates, because it wasn't until the 25th of November. Remember that Rod Jackson had sent this letter through to Fletcher Building head office on the 17th of November. So he'd obviously sat down before the 17th of November and said that Fletcher Building had commissioned him to write this letter, rubber stamping the risk assessment, and that they were wanting to go through with mandatory policies. It wasn't until the 25th of November that Fletcher Building head office let everybody know that they were now thinking of mandating the vaccine, and if you didn't get vaccinated, you would lose your job. It didn't matter where you worked. One of our group worked from home. One day a year, he would go in for a Christmas party to the office. He was mandated. One guy in our group drove trucks. Never anywhere where he would be pose a risk to anybody else. He drove trucks all day, and he was amazing. I mean, he got so many awards. He was the best driver in the whole of New Zealand for placemakers. He got awards, he got bonuses, everything. People were working from home permanently, and yet they still got mandated. And you know, we wondered at that stage, because it came as a shock out of the blue, where did it all come from? And the government changed the wording so they could mandate. That was basically it. I think at that stage, a Fletcher Building was thinking, oh, we'll be in trouble. Under the Privacy Act and also under all these other acts, if we just go through and summarily mandate the vaccine when we don't have legal backup to do this. So we need to ask the government to give us that the wording so that we can go ahead and mandate our staff. I think that's what happened. And I mean, in the interim, when we'd had the lockdowns and the wages subsidy had come through and all the rest of it, it became common knowledge that the government had handed out something like $70 million to Fletcher Building in a wages subsidy. They didn't pay out all of that to their employees, and they never paid the balance back to the government. That became a common knowledge, and it was in the media as well. So, you know, at this stage, the unvaccinated of us were feeling very, very vulnerable.
Can I interrupt you again, Penny, just for clarification, two things. One is you had been promised by Fletcher Building that there would be no mandates, which had given you some comfort. They're then working in the background, getting a risk assessment, and then they get the risk assessment reviewed by Professor Rod Jackson. He indicates in his letter that it's the parent company of Fletcher Building making a decision offshore, that right around the globe there will be mandates. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. In his letter, he says the territories.
Yes.
Across the different territories and regions. So this was Australia, New Zealand, wherever Fletcher Building were.
So this was bigger than New Zealand Fletcher Building. The bosses here were being told.
Oh, I have no idea what they were being told. I know that my boss and all the branch operators were called into head office in Auckland to discuss it. And he came back from that meeting, as you know, I worked quite closely with him. He was my immediate boss, obviously. And he came back and he said they were all for it. We're all for it, Penny. We want the mandate. We want, you know, this was before any decision had been made as to whether we were going to mandate or not. And he said head office have basically told us that, you know, we're going to be mandating. I was shocked.
And if you look at your workplace, there are 50, you said, in the branch.
Yes.
And there at this stage, at some point, there's four holdouts. And so the 46 feels as strongly as the four, probably. Amongst them, there'd be some hotheads, clearly, who want to be only around vaccinated people. And so they're all for mandating or getting rid of those that aren't vaxxed because they see them as a risk. And so for head office, it's like a 46 versus 4 scenario.
It wasn't completely like that, Rodney, because there were people within our branch that supported us and supported our decisions. and say, good on you for standing up, because you know, you think it's wrong, and you're standing on your principles, and good on you, and we support you quietly. A questionnaire was sent out to everybody in the Fletcher Building, asking, basically giving a multi-choice. Do you agree with the mandates and what do you think of it? And you were given 250 words to write back what you thought of them they mandated. So you couldn't say anything more than 250 words. Or you wouldn't believe what I said. Mind. But you know, a lot of our colleagues that hadn't been, you know, instigators of bullying coercion actually wrote back and admitted they wrote back and said they didn't agree with mandating.
Mm.
So there were a lot of people within Fletcher Building that might have got the vaccine, but they didn't agree with the mandates.
Yes. That was the same at the protest, I noticed. There were a lot of people at the protest who had the vaccine.
Yes. So that, you know, we had their support. But I mean, you know, this thing about Fletcher's coming out with this decision on the 25th of November. And then they said, oh, what we'll do is we will send you out a query as to what you think about that. We are going to consult with you. And, of course, nobody realised that the consultation had already been done. Rod Jackson had rubber-stamped their risk assessment, and the government had agreed to change the wording on the Emergency Act and all these other things. So they sent out this multi-choice thing, and then they said they were going to have a question-and-answer session. Three question and answer sessions where people could ask questions about this mandate coming up. And then after the question and answer sessions and after our multi-choice questions, they would make a decision. There were 2 weeks left for us before they made a decision. They gave it 2 weeks. So if anybody wanted to go and get informed consent or research the vaccine or anything like this, they weren't able to get that time to do that before the question and answer sessions.
No.
So the question and answer sessions came through. And basically, there were a lot of people that were questioning, you know, why are we having this mandate? Why do we have to have it now because of Omicron? Can't we do something else? Can't we just test people? Do other alternatives apart from the vaccine? And those people that are unvaccinated, you know, they're our work colleagues. So, you know, how are they going to be treated? All these questions came up. And one person actually asked, because the mandate actually said, we will let you know on the 16th of December whether we're going to mandate, and then you are given to the 15th of February to get vaccinated. And we will terminate the unvaccinated on the 15th of March. So it became very apparent very quickly that what Fletcher's were doing was keeping their staff on over Christmas and New Year, because they could not, they wouldn't be able to replace us, even though we were the dregs, we were the unvaccinated. So they needed us to work for them during that time before they terminated us.
Ironic, isn't it? Because what they're saying is we'll withstand the risk through the Christmas period.
Yeah, exactly. and you know, and then you know, Bruce McEwen, he's actually gone on record. I've got the record. It took me forever, and I had to go around it in a very you know, backdoor way. But I got the transcripts of those question and answer sessions, and I printed them out. And so I've got it in writing as to actually what he said. And one of the reasons they had wanted the three-month hiatus was not for our benefit, so we could go and decide whether we wanted to be vaccinated, which is what they said, that we want to give you time to go and consider. But it was for the reason that they were afraid of losing staff and not being able to replace them. So they were going to now have 3 months to find staff for those they knew would not be vaccinated. So that was one of the reasons, plus the Christmas New Year thing.
It's pretty disgusting. Very disgusting and duplicitous. And it would break your heart having been an employee.
Well, especially for people who, one of our members has worked for 25 years loyally, the most amazing, beautiful man. And he, you know, and all through this process, Fletcher's were also saying, if you've worked for us for 25, 30, however many years, and you've got redundancy written into your contract, we're cancelling that.
No
if you
way.
Don't get vaccinated. Yep. They cancelled the redundancy. So here's this poor man, worked 25 years loyally for the company, never missed a sick day, you know, all these things, and he gets his redundancy pulled from under him. There were many like that. It makes me cry, Rodney.
It really cry. Does. And we're talking about the cream, you know, the cream of people who are prepared to stand on a principle and suffer horrendous cost, but stand true. They're the people you want to be, whatever your views about the vax, they're the people you want to be in the foxhole with, aren't they?
Oh, I guess at the time we weren't thinking of it like that, Rodney. We were just, I was just so shocked. I mean, for me personally, I had done research because at that stage the FDA had sent out the pages of Pfizer's tests, and one of the problems with the vaccine was that anaphylactic shock. You could have anaphylactic shock and die from it, and I'd had anaphylactic shock in a surgery years and years and years ago. So I actually asked my boss. I said to him, what about the people who can't get the vaccine because of medical reasons? I said, I've had anaphylactic shock, so what's the story? And he said, oh, if anything happens, you can go to ACC.
Goodness me. That's said, health and safety, yeah.
Yeah.
They should say that when you run up a ladder, you know, shouldn't they? No, if anything happens and the ladder isn't, breaks, you can go to ACC. I don't think that would work. Oh my goodness me. Now, you're with Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. It's my great privilege this morning to be talking to Penny Jackson, who is part of a group taking a legal case against Fletcher Building. We're hearing the ins and outs of that and how fascinating it is. I have to say, it doesn't give you a great insight into the leadership of one of our large corporates. And while there is that negative of how people behave, they're also very good people, sadly quietly supporting but not prepared to speak up. And we're also joined by the group's lawyer, Matthew Haig, who's keeping us up to speed and discussing the legal ramifications of this case. Now, Penny, the next thing, I guess, was the date rolled round.
Oh, yes. So it was no surprise because, as I said, my immediate boss, who was the branch operator, had walked through the office at one point and said, and I said to him, do you think it's going to go through? And he said, oh, you know, I actually think it will. And I said, nothing's going to make any difference, is it? And he said, no. Personally, he said, I don't think so. So this was before the decision came out. So as a branch operator, he would have known what the decisions and what was going on behind the scenes. And when it came out on the 16th of December, we were all shocked. We thought, how could they do this? So, you know, this was only after 2 weeks to respond. But they pretended to be really, really nice and said, look, we will sit down and we will talk to anybody who has an issue with this, and we will treat you individually, et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately, their risk assessment on their mandate policy was a broad stroke. No risk assessment was done individually for anybody in the company. So those people who were working from home, like our group member who only went in for a Christmas party, wasn't risk assessed. People in the garden centre who were working outside were not risk assessed. Nobody individually was risk assessed. It was a broad stroke risk assessment. So I went to a meeting with my boss, with one of my other colleagues, and basically said to him, so this mandate says that we have to get vaccinated because we are the risk. How is it that if we get vaccinated, then and you terminate our employment, the next day we can come back into the premises as customers? I said, are you going to mandate the customers? Are you going to put a sign out on the front door saying you have had to have tested negative for Omicron before you enter the premises? I said, are you going to do that? And he, oh, don't be silly, that's not practical. And I said, why not? Why isn't it practical? You're asking staff, but customers are coming through and you don't know whether they're vaccinated or unvaccinated. So if we're such a risk, why is it not possible for you to insist that customers come in and they've passed a negative test? So he just laughed and said it wasn't practical. So that's okay. It went on from there. The meeting went on. There was an HR person who attended that meeting. But it was very, very one-sided. They wouldn't listen and they kept on repeating the mantra that they were being fair and discussing things with me. And that they weren't bullying or coercing or manipulating. I brought up the fact that I also had religious beliefs, mm-hmm. And that I had heard the vaccine had been developed with fetal cells, and mm-hmm. There was no way I was going to get it for that reason either. And I'd mentioned the anaphylactic shock. But that didn't seem to make any difference. Both my colleague and I were the same, and we had got a religious exemption from our church, but we were not able to use that because the company said the only exemptions that we will give for the vaccine are if you go to the Ministry of Health and get an exemption that way. So no informed consent, no exemptions, nothing was offered to us. So we didn't even bring our religious exemptions in to management. We just couldn't believe that they would discriminate like that. So what happened was we all know that the Ministry of Health and Ashley Bloomfield at the time came out and said the only people to get a Ministry of Health exemption, probably around 200 people, no more. How he knew that number, I don't know, but I believe the parliamentarians were given a choice as to whether they wanted to get a vaccine or not. So perhaps 120 plus their families with the Ministry of Health. And he knew that number. So for us poor people who were really fearful of even for a medical reason like mine, the anaphylactic shock, who were really fearful of having the vaccine, we were not allowed informed consent or exemptions. So at that stage, the decision came out on the 16th of December, as I say. We tried to talk to our boss about it. He didn't want to know. And I said to him, well, I actually... you know, came full on and said to him, look, I believe the reason you're having us stay for 3 months is because you have to replace our positions and, you know, we're working over Christmas and New Year. Of course, he denied that. So we felt really coerced, bullied and manipulated. At that stage, I was working in the office and I was suffering panic attacks. Couldn't sleep at night, and I actually got shingles. Sometimes I just have to walk out of the office and sit downstairs and try and think about how crazy the world was, Rodney. How could people treat each other like that? Anyway, I mean, that was, sorry, I didn't mean to cry. That
not
was,
at all. I can.
That was fully... something that not only I was going through, but our group was going through, the people in our group. So we actually banded together and decided to have a little four-person group. We'd have a drink on a Friday night and we'd discuss things because we needed to support each other. Mm. And then I said, well, I'll start a Telegram channel and we just pop in there and, you know, discuss things when we're not around. And, you know, it was becoming, in the office, it was becoming really hard to actually talk to each other even. If you were seen talking to each other, it was sort of like a no-no, you know. You were told to get back to your workstation, you know. It got that bad. So we would have this little drink on a Friday night and I started the Telegram channel and then through different other channels, other people wanted to join the Telegram channel and the group grew from there. We reached about 101 people that were having the same issues.
With Fletcher Building or with other organisations?
Fletcher Building.
Mm-hmm.
Fletcher Building and their subsidiaries. And that covered people from Higgins, Golden Bay Cement, Myco, Placemakers, all over New Zealand. Everybody was being treated the same way. And that was just a very, very small percentage of those, I believe, that Fletcher Building terminated because, you know, the rumour went round that they were trying to get 1,000 people terminated and this was something that it was a rumour, I have to say, but it was something that they'd already done in what we called the Blue Moon when we were locking down and they had terminated 1,000 people then. Well, I'd seen the writing on the wall because Fletcher Building were going digital and they needed less staff. So at that stage, I mean, you know, anything was possible. How many people they terminated at the end of the day, I don't know, but there were 101 in total in our group that were constantly on Telegram supporting each other and helping each other through. So, it was a very, very difficult period.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine it. I honestly can't imagine. It is shocking. And if you hadn't lived through it, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine it. We lived through it. So you got terminated.
So in the end, I mean, the 3 months passed. I took sick leave. Others took sick leave. You could not work in that toxic environment, would me. We took sick leave and we ended up not being paid while we were off work. I got threatening letters that I had to go back to work or else.
From management?
Yep.
My goodness.
Yep. So I had to send in medical certificates to say that I was under stress and all the rest of it. I think they were desperate because they had nobody to replace me. I was sole charge in that office and the person who, I was training, in the office to do some of the work I was doing, was pretty hopeless. So there was no way she could have done the work I did. So they would have to bring an accountant in, and they did this. You know, they had their accountancy office and head office in Auckland, and they had to bring an accountant in to the office to help out. So I got these threatening emails saying, get back to work or else. So I held up. I wasn't going to go back, and a lot of our people said the same thing. They didn't want to work till the 15th of March. They felt used and abused. They knew that they were going to be terminated, but they were just being used until the 15th of March to get Fletcher Building over a difficult period. So on the 15th of February, we were all told, you have to have made your decision by now. And if you do not tell us what your decision is, we will assume, this is what Fletcher Building said in their mandate, they will assume that you are not vaccinated and therefore you will be terminated. So that was another thing. They were assuming that people weren't vaccinated if they didn't give them their vaccine status. So the terminations came, and then 4 weeks later they reversed them.
No.
4 weeks later they reversed
them. No.
Yes. They reversed their mandate, and only a couple of people in our group got offered their jobs back. Only a couple of people, but that was discriminatory in itself. You would think that.
Hang on. You have to take me through this because some of that logic escaped me. You had 4 weeks, you'd been advised you're going to be terminated because unless you could say that you were vaccinated, you were gone. And what did they then reverse?
They reversed their mandate policy 4 weeks later. So you did not have to be vaccinated to work for them.
And that came into effect on what date?
Oh, look, I don't have the date in
front. Oh, no, okay, don't worry. But, like, was it 4 weeks after the 15th of March or before the 15th of March?
After the 15th of March. So they terminated us on the 15th of March and given us.
And then reversed the mandate.
Yeah, and then they reversed the mandate. And they offered a couple of people their jobs back, but the vast majority of us weren't offered our jobs. So, and this comes back to what I surmise, Rodney, about the whole thing, is that it worked out well for Fletcher's bottom line because they needed to get rid of staff. This was the rumour going around. It's only a rumour. I'm not saying it's actual fact. But the rumour going around was that they needed to get rid of 1,000 staff out of Fletcher Building. And this worked in their favour to do that. Over that year, 2021, Fletcher Building made unprecedented profits, bigger than they'd ever made before, and their CEO got something like $6 million plus in bonuses and wages for that year.
Deepest creep.
And they weren't paying their wages subsidy back to the government. Now, that wages subsidy was... This was reported in the media, by the way. That wages subsidy was taxpayers' money. Certainly wasn't paid to the employee. Not all of it was paid to the employees.
You're on Radley Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. We're listening to Penny Jackson. We've got Matthew Haig to comment on the legal implications from Frontline Law. We're reaching out to Fletcher Building because we would love to have you come on in response to Penny's experience and help us understand how you sleep at night when you hear what your organisation did to good people, what you did to Penny. So you're welcome to come on my show. I will give you a very fair and reasonable hearing because there's always another side. We'd love to hear it. Okay, Penny, you had lost your job. Then what?
The ramifications afterwards, we thought at this stage we had been desperate to get some legal advice and we'd taken on Frontline Law to help us, and they've been wonderful, I have to say that, all through this process. A group of us decided we would do a personal grievance against Fletcher Building for what they'd done. And unjustified dismissal, as we could see. The after effects didn't stop there, though, Rodney. What happened was that a few of us had to sell houses, move addresses. Some of them lost their identity even. You know, for men who are... you're a man, you're the provider of the family. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of humiliation and shame. There's one guy sent me a message last night and said, I worked for the company for 15 years, loyally, loved my job, loved what I did, had good workmates, they were friends. He said, when I was terminated, he said, I felt so ashamed. The humiliation was awful. he couldn't hold his head up. He lost friendships and family members shunned him. He was discredited wherever he looked. And there were others in the group exactly the same, like my man who drove trucks and got bonuses and was awarded, you know, amazing things. He was in a small community where everybody knew each other. And he was humiliated, discredited, and felt terrible. He was the provider of the family. You know, for men, I think it's a lot worse, especially when you put your heart and soul into working for a company and you do the best you can do, and then you're suddenly terminated for nothing more than a medical decision. So, you know, these are the things we went through. Some of us got sick. As I said, I got shingles, couldn't sleep at night, afraid to lose my house, mortgagee sale. Had to sell. Others had to sell their houses. Others were having problems as well. And still others living in vans and caravans to this day, temporary accommodation. They can't get work because, of course, you can't get a referral and a reference from your old employer. So they're still living in caravans and vans and things like that. So one of them's couch surfing with family, got nowhere to go, no job, no help financially. You know, she has to rely on family couch surfing. You know, and for people who were proud of their work and wanted to work, having to go on to a benefit to keep them going, was just the nail in the coffin, I think, for some of them. But that's the only way they could survive. You know, you can't get a job. You can't get a reference. You're living in temporary accommodation. You're couch surfing. You one of our members at the time had medical issues and actually told Fletcher's that before he was terminated. They didn't believe him. Another one was terminated on the day that he was at a funeral of a close family member. So the person who terminated him knew that he was at this funeral. So, you know, these are the after effects. You know, close-knit small communities know that you have been terminated. You don't have a job. But
Penny, you and your group are fighting back.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. We're trying to.
How lovely does that sound?
If we're trying to, but it's a black hole, Rodney. We've gone through this legal process and Matthew might be able to help here.
Yes, well, why don't we hop across, give you a spell. Penny, may I say how wonderful that exposition was? And I'm sure I speak on behalf of all the listeners how much we love and support you. And you are a very, very brave and principled woman. You've done everything right, and we have enormous respect for you and your group, because this is a fight for every one of us, including the vaccinated that you're having. What is your Give a Little page so we can help support you?
Okay, so the Give a Little page is it's called I've sent a link through. It's called Underdog Fights Goliath for Justice.
Right.
Please help us.
We'll put that on the webpage with for you. Now, Matthew, tell us about the case. It's pretty heart-wrenching, isn't it? I mean, we've got to get into the legal side, but at a personal level, that's pretty tough.
Yeah, look, it really is. And, you know, the words that came to mind as Penny was speaking was the politics of kindness. I think what we've seen in Penny's experience and the many others who have been affected in similar ways, is this is the politics of kindness of this government. And I mean that in a very sarcastic, cynical way, because clearly it's not.
Never outside of wartime when conscription has a government been more brutal to a people.
And I hope that people who haven't been directly affected by this or who have had loved ones affected by this can have the empathy and understanding to put themselves in the shoes of the people that have been affected.
Mm.
Because New Zealanders are pretty good at being kind, pretty good at being understanding of others who are in hard positions, and this is one of them. So I hope that people who listen can imagine what it's like to be affected as Penny and the others have.
Tell us about the legal case.
Sure. So this is a case before the Employment Relations Authority. This is an employment matter. Some of the other cases we've done have been challenges to government mandates, and that's been by way of judicial review in the High Court. This is a different jurisdiction, and rightly so, because it's an employment case in which an employer acting in a private capacity has imposed a vaccine mandate on its employees. So what we're saying is that Fletcher Building has breached its obligations of good faith. A lot of that relates to Penny's talk about the risk assessment. Now, an employer has an obligation to consult with employees before they impose a decision that could have an adverse effect like their dismissal. And clearly in the case of the vaccine policy, that was the effect. So they had an obligation to consult with employees. What that means is they had to provide all relevant information and provide them an opportunity to comment before a decision is made. Now, we say that the risk assessment was flawed and that the information, the detail that underpinned this so-called risk assessment wasn't provided properly to the affected employees. Penny said it was presented as a fait accompli. We agree it was predetermined. They came up with this risk assessment, they presented it, and then said, before we decide whether or not to impose the policy, please give us your comment. Well, that's a bit like saying, here's a policy that will result in your dismissal, but before we, it doesn't make sense. It's not proper consultation. So that's part of it. Now, the other parts of the case is discrimination. Penny talked about some people have religious beliefs against receiving the vaccination. Now, not everyone does. Not all Christians do. Not all people of other faiths have those beliefs, and that's absolutely fine. The wonderful thing about Christianity and other faiths is that it's not monolithic. People do have different beliefs. And in Penny's case and some others, they believe that because the vaccine had been developed using a cell line descended from cells likely taken from an aborted fetus in the 1970s, and that cell line is known as HEK293, that to receive the vaccine that had been developed and tested based on that cell line was to have a degree of complicity in that abortion that they were, that was unacceptable to them. They had a religious belief against abortion.
And that's perfectly understandable, right?
Yeah, it really is. And you know, you don't have to share that belief, but what I think is needed is we accept people are entitled to that belief.
Yes.
So, look, that's the religious part and the discrimination part of it. And then finally, of course, these people were dismissed. So we say the dismissal was unjustified. And by that, we say that, look, the other issues are standalone issues, but they're related as well. A fair and reasonable employer acting in those circumstances could not reasonably have made the decision to dismiss those people. You know, I'd go back to the risk assessment. Penny didn't spend most of her life in the workplace. People spend a lot of their life in the workplace, but actually most of their life is spent in the community, in their homes, around people for which there is no vaccine mandate. Penny brought up the really good point that Fletcher Building allowed customers to come in who were unvaccinated, who were untested. Now, that's fine, but how on earth can they say it was so important that employees be vaccinated that if they were not, they should be dismissed, they should lose their jobs? That doesn't make sense. That's not something a fair and reasonable employer could do.
Because you'd have to say, wouldn't you, for a proper risk assessment, you'd say, what's the risk to our employees of having Penny there versus not having Penny there?
Well,
and
you and I both know
that is an infinitesimal, if any difference.
Well, that's right. But I'd go further. I'd say yes, that's the starting point. But then the next question is, okay, so if that's the risk, what effect would a control measure like vaccination have on that risk?
Yes.
And we know, and Fletcher Building knew, that vaccination had negligible effect against the spread and transmission. So as a control measure, whatever the underlying risk, and we say that the underlying risk was comparable to the community, it wasn't any higher, all the rest of it.
And the vaccine wouldn't have changed.
Difference. Exactly. It made no difference. So risk assessment was rubbish. And
that's why you're the lawyer. Good on you.
Yes, well, I've had to do a lot of reading about risk assessments. And interestingly enough, it's not stuff we have to make up. There's actually a New Zealand Australian standard on risk assessment. It goes to a couple of hundred pages, more than I ever wanted to know about risk assessments. But the point is that this is black and white settled in terms of policy and the approach you should take. Fletcher Building failed in that approach.
Tell me, I didn't want to interrupt Penny at the time, but I wanted to. Tell me about this change the government did to, presumably an order in council, to allow Fletcher Challenge to introduce this mandate.
Mm. So there was advocacy from some employers, particularly large ones, particularly ones who were quite close to the government, to have legislation introduced that allowed them to make a private mandate. Now, what the government did do was implement Schedule 3A of the Employment Relations Act. And that did talk about vaccine mandates. It talked about the process to follow if someone was unvaccinated. It didn't go as far as to give employers the ability to impose a vaccine mandate in a way that was inconsistent with the existing employment obligations. And in fact, there are actually some protections within that schedule, one being that they had to exhaust all reasonable alternatives prior to dismissing an employee. And in Penny's case, she said, you know, she's working at home for long periods. She could have continued that. She was willing to test. There's all kinds of alternatives. And we've seen some really good cases coming out of the authority that confirm that.
So the schedule gave them, at the time, some comfort, but didn't remove all of Penny's rights and didn't remove the need for a good faith process as defined within the Employment Relations Act.
Correct.
So, oh boy.
Mm. You know, I think I have no sympathy for Fletcher's, which is a very large employer with vast resources and advice. And my view is that they imposed the mandate not for legitimate reasons, but for ideological reasons, in part prompted by the government's messaging around COVID vaccination. But who I do have sympathy for are the small employers who, in good faith, with the best of intentions, took what the government was saying at face value and are now finding themselves open to significant legal liability. And that's some of the cases we've seen come through the courts and tribunal recently. And I do have sympathy for those people. I think this all goes back to government. I think, you know, Jacinta Ardern said herself that in the beginning, when vaccines were first introduced, she wasn't considering implementing a mandate. Mm. Well, I don't know what changed, but something did because that was implemented. It was a misstep by government. It was the most significant breach of rights that I've seen in my lifetime. It was wrong. What I would like to see happen is that hopefully the incoming government acknowledge the wrong that happened and take steps, whether it's through some amendments in the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act or other parts of the law, to make it more difficult for this to happen again.
But it's interesting too, because clearly there's a big misstep, whether deliberate or not, in that Schedule 3A change, because they appeared to be giving comfort to employers, but in actual fact, it wasn't the comfort that you would have expected.
Well, it wasn't the cover. Yes. It wasn't the comfort that Fletcher's wanted.
No. And Fletcher's are now hoisted by, I mean, the government could have easily said, yeah, you can decide to implement mandates and there'll be no recourse. through the tribunal or the courts for a dismissal for this basis. And that would have been a hands-down misere. But they didn't. And in a funny way, from a government's perspective and from a Fletcher's building perspective, that's a huge misstep, because if they'd done it to the intention of what they were trying to achieve, Penny and her group wouldn't have a leg to stand on. But as it is, I would have thought it's quite a strong case.
Yes, I think it is too.
Now, why isn't it being heard?
Well, the courts are and tribunal is a slow-moving mechanism. It's frustrating because you have clients, Penny and the group, but also a range of other clients who this is really taking the toll on them, both financially and in terms of stress. And they just want their day in court in front of the tribunal. We're very supportive of that. Why is it taking so long? Well, I won't go into too much detail around some of the procedural back and forths in that particular case, but the unfortunate reality is that these things do take time. Too much time in my view, but that's the reality of it.
Is there a lot of opportunity for the other side, the respondents, to delay through the process?
Yeah, there is. So I'll speak in general terms again. Yes, there certainly is, particularly for a large employer who has the resources to engage lawyers who will throw up any procedural roadblock they can. And I'm speaking in general terms. Luckily for Penny and the group, Frontline Law are good at what we do. We've done a number of these cases with significant success. So we're very optimistic that things will end well. It's just a matter of getting there.
We saw a similar thing with Christchurch insurance claims following the earthquake, where the insurers would have respectable QCs just pretending to misread letters, wait the length of time to respond, then say we want clarification on this. And they were winning as long as they were delaying, and they could delay for years.
Yes, yes.
And then the day before it would go to court, they would make an offer.
Very frustrating. That's an unfortunate aspect of the legal system.
But yes, but of course it just puts Fletcher Building in a more negative light.
I think it does. And unfortunately for Fletcher's, this group is determined.
Isn't that lovely?
Good on them for
sticking. Oh my goodness. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the legal implications of this and the case? Or do you think we've covered it?
Look, I think there's so much to talk about. We've been really lucky and privileged to represent a range of clients in challenging vaccine mandates, both privately and publicly. I think the only thing I would add is maybe another gripe from me, and that is we have this Royal Commission on the COVID response. The chair of the Royal Commission is an epidemiologist who has openly called for stricter COVID measures prior to being appointed as the chairperson. The terms of reference for the Royal Commission are so narrow as to preclude any meaningful analysis of vaccine mandates and other significant restrictions. What I would like to see is the incoming government stopping that Royal Commission, appointing another with a wider terms of reference, appointing someone independent, free from perceived bias or actual bias, because this is a huge thing for New Zealand. Yes. We've seen the personal cost from Penny and the group, but economically it's had significant effect on our country. The New Zealanders are entitled to a Royal Commission that will genuinely inquire into that process.
Absolutely.
That's nice.
It's like everything of this present government. It was a total sham and a propaganda device, the Royal Commission. Tell me, Matthew, is it part of your case, the bullying and toxicity of the workplace as well, or are you just concentrating on the mandates and the dismissal?
Yeah, look, the focus is on the dismissal, but I think we will, and yes, it is part of our case, and it will go maybe to damages more than anything else.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what are the sort of sanctions that you would be expecting possible on a good day that could occur with this case? So let's imagine everything goes swimmingly as your best expectations. So I'm not holding you to this as a legal thing, but on a really good day, everything goes well. What could be the possible outcome?
Well, we are asking the tribunal to award compensation to the affected individuals. We're asking for the authority to impose a penalty against Fletchers and that penalty be paid to the individuals in equal parts. Now, what we're not asking for is reinstatement for obvious reasons, the length of time since it happened and just the fundamental breakdown in trust that has occurred between Fletchers and the individuals caused by Fletchers.
And how many individuals are in the case, on the case?
Sure, there is. I'm just going to scroll to the top. Is it 11, Penny, or is it slightly less?
It's 9 that are going forward at the moment, but we've got 36 in the whole group. And Fletchers wanted to separate us out into the different Fletcher Building subsidiaries like Placemakers, Higgins, Myco, et cetera, et cetera. We wanted to go as a full group, which are about 36 of us, but Fletchers wouldn't look at that. So the first group to go forward to the ERA is the Placemakers subsidiary or Fletcher Distribution. It was under Fletcher Distribution and Fletcher Building. So that's the first group. And then there are groups after us. So there's still people waiting even to be heard on this in our group. And we're hoping for a positive outcome so that they don't have to go through what we've gone through in the last 18 months. It's been a black hole, Rodney. And there's been delay after delay after delay and demands from various people. So you know, this has gone on for 18 months, and I think the ERA have implied that we may not even get a hearing until 2024 sometime. So, yes. You know, we really want to move this along because there are people that are hurting financially, emotionally, health-wise, et cetera. They want to get on with their lives. And we just want to move the group through this phase and sort of get them supported and get them, get some justice for them, Rodney.
Yes, okay.
You know, so the Give a Little Page is basically also to raise funds for the legal costs because after 18 months it's costing us quite a bit to keep going. So
tell us the Give a Little Page again, Penny.
It's called where am I? Sorry.
I'll
it's called
back.
Underdog Goliath Justice. Underdog Fights Goliath
Great.
For Justice.
Great. Thank you for that. Now, Matthew, is there a possibility in this process for Fletcher's Building to settle ahead of the case?
There's in every dispute, there's always that potential. And actually, I think that that's always the right outcome for both parties. So I would be hopeful that that's still on the table, but ultimately that is up to Fletchers.
Yeah. And secondly, presumably there'll be people who worked for Fletchers who were dismissed, who are not part of the group. Do they become the beneficiaries of this case?
No, it would only be the named applicants in these proceedings. And the hard thing about employment law is that you've only got 90 days to raise a personal grievance, except for in cases of sexual harassment, which is now a year. What that means, though, is unless they've raised a personal grievance, which simply means bringing the problem to the attention of the employer within 90 days, that they may be out of time. But I can't say that without talking to them about their individual case first.
Got it. Well, thank you, Matthew, for taking this case. Thank you for taking the other cases. Thank you. I should say to listeners that Matthew is a former serviceman and policeman, and he's given wonderful service to New Zealand in those capacities, put his life at risk for us. And here he is using his legal training and his legal skills and legal experience to stand up for the rights of all New Zealanders, which is what this case is about, and he has done so consistently through his life, being prepared to fight for it on the battlefield and in the courts and tribunals. So thank you, Matthew. It's a privilege to have you on our show. Penny, last word to you.
Okay.
What do you want to tell us?
Thank you for having me on, Rodney. And I just want to thank the listeners for hearing our story. I think that this is a much wider story than just our little group. Mm. I think that there are so many people in New Zealand have been impacted by these mandates, and there are so many people still suffering like we are. And my heart goes out to you all, basically. I just want to say I'm so sorry. I want to see some justice done. And I'm just saying, let's see some justice done. Let's see this case heard. Let's see some justice for some people. And know that everybody else that was affected, you know, you have our support too.
This is justice for us all, Penny. You don't need to. We understand that perfectly.
Yeah.
This is Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. You're on Reality Check Radio. We've been blessed this morning to have two wonderful Kiwis, Matthew Haig from Frontline Law and Penny Jackson for the Fletcher Building Group. Amazing what they've been through, but it's a familiar story, is it not? And here are two people who are standing up for us, and we will be following their case. They will be updating us. And remember, there's that web page, the Give a Little page, which is David Fights Goliath.
Underdog
Fights Goliath. And also, please send us messages of support at 2057 for a text. Email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. You know I love receiving your messages, but I know Penny and Matthew would love to receive them too. We wish you every bit of luck and support, Penny and Matthew. And now that I am a Christian, I will be praying for your case, and I'll be praying for you to have the strength to see it through, as I'm sure you will. So thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you for having us, Rodney.
Thank you, Rodney.
There we have it. What a terrible time that New Zealand has been through, and it's brought out the best and the worst in us. And it's the best and the worst, not in terms of people. You know, there's a lot of people who did some terrible things, but we've got to realize that badness runs through all our hearts, as Alexander Solzhenitsyn was pointed out to us. But here are two people who have reached into the best parts of their heart, the very best parts of their heart, and they've found the strength and the purpose to stand up at terrific cost for all of us, not just for all of us here now, but for our children and our grandchildren, and we have to salute them. You're on Real Talk with Rodney Hyde on RadleyCheck.radio. Thank you so much for listening.
This is Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 a.m.